That's not my frequency.
Don't wait all day to do that.
Not my tone.
All right. Actually, let me get one of those bad prayers. Welcome, everybody. My name is Tarek. I'm an alcoholic addict. And we're going to start with a few moments of silence, followed by the lay aside prayer, which is on the cover of your program. And we're going to read right through it after a few moments of silence and just stop with the punctuations. God, please help me lay aside everything I think I know about this illness, these steps, this program, this book, this conference, myself, and especially you, God, so I may have an open mind and a new experience with this illness, these steps, this program, this book, this conference, myself, and especially with you, God. Please help me see the truth. Amen. All right, well, welcome to the first annual Fellowship of the Spirit Georgia Conference. I'm going to take the next 10 to 15 minutes, and I'm going to briefly discuss where the Fellowship of the Spirit comes from, a few house cleaning items, and a couple of other things I think are necessary to be discussed real quick at the outset. 1993, July 29th through August 1st, it was started on a Thursday. There's a group of people in Denver who came up with this idea. I know names. Mickey was one name, Don Pritz, Gary Brown was involved, and some other people. Bob Olson was the Thursday night speaker. Gary Brown was the Friday night speaker. Don Pritz did the big book workshop on Saturday, and he was the Saturday night speaker. Sharon Barker was the Sunday morning speaker, and they had another Al-Anon speaker on Saturday night, I believe. If you open up the program, our big book on page 17 introduces us to the concept of the spirit of the fellowship, and it warns us about the fellowship, and it talks about the cement in our foundation as equal parts, common problem, common solution. A lot of us, when we get here, the first thing we experience is the spirit of the fellowship and the common problem. But that by itself does not hold us together. Okay, we have common problem, common solution. So within the spirit of the fellowship, there's a second fellowship. It's got different entrance requirements, right? And they're described beautifully on page 164 in our big book. And we've taken this out of this section of the book. We realize we only know a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man or the woman who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. This is a description of the entrance requirements for the fellowship of the Spirit. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. It's a night and day difference. I think most of us in this room, and I can't speak because I don't know half of you, but I can speak for the other half. And we have sat in that meeting, and you have heard a message of depth and weight, and you've been touched. Your spirit was touched by someone else's spirit, and all they did was share their message and their experience from their heart based on what I just read. That's a powerful thing. When you can go to New Orleans, Louisiana and sit in a meeting and hear it and you feel like you know the person. Right? That's a powerful connection. And that, I believe, is what we're doing here this weekend. We've all tapped that unsuspecting inner resource and we can go deeper with it. And that's the vision that we used when we created this, and we wanted to be as close to the source as possible. Right? I hope that makes sense to you. I'm going to say a few more things. This fellowship of the Spirit has no affiliation with any of the 12-step fellowships. Addicts are welcome here. We have Co-Anons. Narcanons are going to be here over the weekend, and Al-Anons. We all know the importance of identification. Little or nothing can be accomplished until there is identification. We get that. But if you've been on this path a while, if you listen to Mike and David this weekend share their experience with alcoholism, it doesn't take leaps and bounds to relate our own experience and say, did I feel that way? Did I think that way? Did I use drugs like they're talking about drinking alcohol? Do I believe this program can work for me too? We can still identify. It's not the powerful identification that's needed for 12-step work. I don't want the two to be confused. But on page 51 of our big book, it invites all of us in this room tonight, the Al-Anons, the alcoholics, the addicts, and the Narcanons and the Co-Anons. Once confused and baffled by the seeming futility of existence, they show the underlying reasons why they were making heavy going of life. Leaving aside the drink or the drug question, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. They show how the change came over them. When many hundreds of people were able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact of their lives, they present a powerful reason why one should have faith. That line in our big book just invited all of you here, that even if you're not addict nor alcoholic, because it says leaving aside the drink question, this internal condition will kill. And it kills people with guns and food and sex. It happens to kill us with drugs and alcohol for some of us. Right? So the tenets, the principles, and the values of the 12 steps are just as good for the non-addict and the non-alcoholic as they are for the addict and the alcoholic. That's what I believe. And that, we believe, is the vision we have for this conference. Right? Okay, that was the serious part. Now, on to the fun part. We have a raffle going on this weekend. And we are going to be selling raffle tickets. You can get one raffle ticket for $2. You can get 15 for $10. The people on the committee will not be participating in this raffle. Is that okay with committee members? We talked about it, right? Yeah. I'm going to run through the yes, sir.
Is there a $5 quantity, or is this our $2 or $10?
You get seven.
That would be the logical thing. $5,
seven tickets. I'm good with that. We're going to raffle off a spot to the Big Book Experience September 12th through 14th at this location. Mike Lorenz from Indianapolis, Indiana is going to be the facilitator, one of. And we're also going to auction off a raffle off a spot to next year's Fellowship of the Spirit, April 24th through 26th. Mike Dolphin from California, Los Angeles, I believe, or Northern California. He's living in one of those places. And he's something else. And so $2 could win you one of these spots. It's a pretty big deal. That item will not be raffled off until the very end of the retreat. Okay, those of you thinking leaving early on Sunday, that's our way of making you stay. We've got some great books. I sent that email. I think all of you are familiar. We could have a millionaire among us. A lot of great books, and I got to give props to Drew Bowen and that t-shirt.
Yes.
So we got how many? Yeah. Oh. So we're going to be raffling a couple of those off tonight, actually, at the end of the night. So the raffle is now open. And I feel like I'm... any of us. Would all the committee members please stand up? I feel like I'm forgetting something. Is there something else? Oh, invariably someone's going to lock themselves out of their room. It just happens with these locks. And if you do, come find one of us and we'll get Brother Mark. Now, if this happens at 3 in the morning and you're in your underwear, you're on your own. You're going to figure it out seriously. Yeah. I think that's happened before, has it not? Happened to you. Okay.
Remind everybody about the code on the back of your key.
Back of your key has the code. Sunday morning, when you wake up, go ahead and take the sheets off your bed, put them in the pillowcase, take the pillowcase covers off, put those in the pillowcase, in one of the pillowcases, all your towels, and I believe on that...
It's that one. Stairwell at the end of the hall, in between...
Yeah, all the way down, go down to the bottom, there's a big hamper. Just drop it off in there, but you got to make your bed. So put all the new sheets on, and just put your room the way you found it. And then we'll resume in here for Sunday morning. Meditation is optional. We'll be in here tomorrow morning at 7:15. But understand, we're going to run late tonight. We've got four amazing speakers. And we're going to just have a lot of fun with it. There's going to be a late night meeting. And then we'll end the night. Each speaker is going to go for 45 minutes. And we're going to take, I believe, a 15-minute break between the speakers. And... I'm running through and making sure that's everything. Yes, sir.
You want to say something about the silent dining room?
Correct. We discussed it amongst ourselves, the committee members, and the small dining room on that back hallway is if you want to talk. If you're going to eat in the main dining room or the porch, that will be silent. It's the way the monastery observes things. And they told us we could vote on it. Past retreats, we voted on it. But from what I saw at dinner, most people stayed. You had the option to go to the talking, and you didn't. Would someone insist on voting on it, or would it be okay if we just left it that way?
Let's vote on whether we're
going to
vote on it.
That's a good alky back there. What do y'all want to do? Leave it.
We lost the vote last year.
It was talking last year?
Oh, yeah.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, yeah. Yes, the patio was.
Patio was, maybe? I don't think I haven't been to it. Yeah, we've never had one where we talked in the main dining hall.
And somebody changed their vote.
Yeah. Let's just respect the monastery and how they do things when we're not here. Okay? Vaping. We have a lot of vapors. Vape in your room is all you want. Let's not vape in here and in the hallways. And outside, we can vape and smoke. You can stay outside and talk all night if you like. I think that's about it. Are there any questions?
Okay. No vaping in here?
No vaping in here. No vaping in here. And now that brings me to the introduction of our first speaker. I met Lindsay in 2007 at a CA meeting in Sandy Springs. And she came with my buddy Carl, and she was very timid. If you know Lindsay, that's not a word you use to describe Lindsay right now. She was very reserved, and she didn't say much. And then some time passed where I didn't see her, and then maybe Alpharetta room or somewhere, and the girl was on fire. And then I got to know her. And she's on fire for this program, and she can touch the hardcore person, but she can also touch the people that aren't hardcore like some of us are. And she's able to connect with them. She sponsors a lot of ladies. She carries this message out of this big book. I love when she shows up at our home group. And I love having her around. I really do. When she's not there, I truly miss her. And I love her. And I give you Lindsay.
I just called him Red. Sorry, I can't. That's too much. There's a lot. Okay. Hey, everyone. I'm Lindsay. I'm an alcoholic. And I remember when, I want to thank you so much for asking me to do this for everyone, setting this up. I remember when Tarek called me to ask me if I'd speak, and not going to lie, anyone that's kind of asked me to do anything in the last 2 years, I've been highly confused because I've just like totally lost my mind off and on half the time. So if people ask me to do things, I'm like, wait, you really want me to speak somewhere? Because I don't know what's going to fly out of my mouth. Like, it could just get weird. I might start crying. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. But I know that, and I didn't even know if I was going to be able to make it. But Creator had it fit. I made it. So, I grew up in North Carolina, and honestly, it wasn't until about a year ago I was sitting with this awesome guy, and we were doing like a fist step thing, and a fist step wasn't really a thing, it was just a fist step, and he pointed something out in the book that I think I knew, but I never really like knew, but he was like, he said, Lindsay, because I was telling him my life story, and he said, our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened and what we're like now. And we talked about that for a long time. I don't really know why, but it stuck with me because so much of the illness that I suffer from is what I used to be like, you know. And then there's all that stuff that happened and happens. And then there's where I'm at currently. So we talked about this word be, and for me, it talks to what I'm supposed to be like, what I used to be like, whatever. And I grew up in North Carolina, and it's pretty common. I didn't realize, I don't know if anyone else had this experience, I quite did at times when I was first new coming in, and people were talking about, like, oh, I felt so different and all that, and I totally got that. Like, I really identified with that. But how it kind of I experienced it was very much like this. And I've experienced this in untreated alcoholism, and, you know, before I even knew what this deal was. But so there's me, and then there's just all of you. You know, there's all these other people, and then there's just me. And that's an incredible thing that a wonderful thing happened to me when I first drank. Because from that first, actually not the first time I drank, because the first time I drank, to be honest, I didn't really get drunk because I was in middle school and I was like trying to be really cool, and I wanted to act like I could hold my liquor, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was just like really too cool, so I was just in the corner acting like I was like, just, I already hold my liquor, I know what I'm doing, I'm not going to look like an idiot. And I didn't really get drunk, I just sipped on some like weird drink all night and like was like, that was so cool, I'm so cool, I'm so cool. Because I have to be cool. And, but the first time I got drunk, the wildest thing happened. And I didn't even know it. It's not like I, like, at the time knew what was going on. I had no clue what was going on. All I knew was that I'm a badass, and this is what I do. And this is awesome. Pretty simple stuff. You know, I mean, there's nothing. It's actually very profound, but it wasn't at the time. It's not like, but it was. Like, it was gnarly. I just knew that I was, I loved it every second. Of course, ended up puking like on the ceiling and all that type of stuff. Totally did it again. And, you know, to be honest, through high school, I fortunately had a good gig. I was able to have like this hour and a half break in between these two schools that I went to. So I didn't have a problem getting to class. I mean, you get all this time, you know, and, you know, it was not a big deal. But I drank a lot, and I did a lot of drugs through high school. I got in trouble. I did all that, but whatever, you know, it is what it is. No big deal. You get in trouble, get out of trouble, just get in and out of trouble. That's just what happens. You know, I don't know what else to say. Like, I drank a lot. You know what I mean? Like, I drank all the time, before school, during school, after school. You know what I'm saying? This is what you do. You just, like, drink all the time. And, but I didn't see it at all. Like, I had my parents threatened to put me in, put me somewhere. I don't even know where. I just know I had to calm myself out of that real quick. and made all these promises, got, you know, a little better. And and then when I was 18, it was the first time I got caught drinking and driving. You know, and fortunately kind of like weaseled my way out of that too a little bit, so I didn't get in a lot of trouble. But I did have this long, stern talk from the P units, the parents, the parentals. You know, they're like, Lindsay, like, this is, like, not okay. Like, this is getting bad. Like, you know, you got a big future ahead of you. Like, we don't want you to throw it away. And I'm like, God, you're right. But I really did believe they were right, because by this time, like, I really want to be rich. So, I mean, like, I'm trying to get a lot of money. And, you know, I got my dad and my mom telling me that you're not going to make any money if you keep this shit up. Like, you know, I'm like, God, you're right. So, and I just, you know, I went all out from 14 to 18, you know, I'm like, boom, you know. So I was like, you know, this is good. And I had this talk, and I was like, this is good. I'm going to quit drinking. I don't want to drink anymore. I don't want to party. I don't want to be that chick anymore. Because I don't, like, people still come to me and, like, asking for pot on only a daily basis. Like, I just look like someone who gets, like, fucked up. And I've always had this demeanor, like, I get fucked up, man. And it's not a joke, you know. Like, I don't, even in high school, people were like, oh, it's a little early, don't you think? I'm like, what? Oh, really? When was it late? I don't, there's no distinction there. So I was like, all right, this is going to get good. I'm going to go to school. I'm going to go to college. Not going to drink, be like a straight-A student. So I'm going to get out of school, get an awesome job, and make piles of money. I mean, I'm talking so much money, I can't even handle it. That's the biggest goal. I just want to make some money and, like, be a different person and not, like, do that. And I thought I was, like, had to get older to, like, mature or something like that. So, I don't know, whatever. I mean, I believed it, though. I really did. And I went off to college, and, of course, immediately I tried hanging out with these people, like, that live on, like, the dorm. We didn't get along. I didn't know what. And I was like, ugh. But then I attracted my people. They attracted me, whatever. So, I'm hanging out, and they're, like, going hard. And I was like, no, I don't drink. I quit. They're like, really? You quit drinking? I'm like, oh, yeah. I don't do that anymore. I'm, like, I'm trying to get good grades, you know. I mean, I'm trying to really do the deal here. And they're like, oh, okay. And it was a few months. Like, I mean, I didn't drink for 4 months, 3-4 months or something. And I mean, they were, you know, going hard, you know. And I'm just like, no, I don't do that. No way. No for me. And the wildest thing is just one night I'm hanging out with them. And it wasn't like I even thought about it. I really didn't. It wasn't even like I thought, like, I miss drinking so much. But I tell you one thing, I felt about it. I mean, I, like, tensed about it. It starts to wear, you know, and I didn't know. None of this was conscious, you know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes I'll tell my story, and it sounds like this was, like I knew what was going on and no clue what was going on. I just, now I can see what was really going on a little clearer and communicate it a little bit. But I'm hanging out with everybody like a normal night, just saying no. And the wildest thing happened, they're doing a lot of stuff and they offered me a shot and I was just like, oh yeah, and took it. But there wasn't anything that was like, you know, this is going to get bad, because honestly at that time, I mean, I went through some rough stuff, but it wasn't that bad. But I didn't think twice about it was the point. I didn't think like, oh, I haven't drank in 4 months and doing really good, well now. I'm like hanging out with my parents or anything like that. I was like, whoop. And it didn't take that long after that. Something happened around that time when I turned around that 18 after that. It was a whole different ball game. It was wild because, to be honest, I think when I was in high school, I had some power. You know, if it was a weekday night and my mom called me and said, come home now, and I was out, you know, drinking, smoking pot, whatever, I could go home at that time if I was like 16. After this time, that didn't happen again from that time. So something shifted, and I don't know why, but I know why now, but you know, at the time, I didn't know what was going to happen, and my drinking increased dramatically very fast. So around about a year after that, I called my mom and told her that I needed some help, you know, because a bunch of shit's gone down, you know, it's getting really rough out here. And the hollers of West Virginia, and I'm convinced, because that's where I was living, it was fascinating, But I was convinced that my life was so bad. And I mean, this is real. I mean, I was like 100%. I called my mom. Like, oh, they cut me off, by the way. That already happened like a year ago, too. They were like, we're not dealing with this anymore. You got to go. Bye-bye. So I was kind of fending for myself, not doing a very good job at it. So I called my mom and was like, Mom, I really need some help. I need to see a therapist or a psychologist because I'm drinking a lot. And it's not okay, and I need some help. And I really think that if I saw a therapist or like a psychologist, then I wouldn't drink as much. Then I could get my shit together. She said, "Oh yeah, that's great. Not great. I don't know what she said, but she said something like, okay, I hear you." That was a bad idea. So I had to change my mind about that and realize that was a little dramatic. I don't need to like quit drinking. I don't need a psychologist. That plan is gotta go. So, you know, and I called her. I was like, don't even worry about it. I'm doing great. Like, this is back on track. Got my whole, you know, pretend drug deal game going on. I really didn't do good at, but I pretended to. So everything's back to normal. But the wild thing is, it's the wildest thing. It's like I'll get really rough and drinking will be a lot, and then I'll hit some sort of like, damn, I need some help with this. This is bad, you know. So let me call for help, and then I'll do something like kind of like get my shit together again, and then I'm like, okay, we're good again. And then it's like this, and I don't ever see what's going on. So time passes. It doesn't get any better, just to let you know, if you're wondering. It's not really getting any better. And I was living with someone, and I had some consequences happen. Got kicked out of some places to live. And I finally called my folks again. I was like, okay, I'm for serious this time. Like, this time's real. I really do need some help. You know, after the other call was a joke, this is a real time. Yeah. I didn't get it, so they were like, if you're going to live with us, you can't drink. You can't be doing that mess. You know what I'm saying? You can't be doing all this crazy shit that you do. I was like, all right, I won't do any of that crazy stuff. So, and I thought I was going to do a lot better. I said the whole thing again to therapists. So I went and saw them 3 days later, or like 3 days later I was drinking. That wasn't supposed to do that. I'm never supposed to do that thing. And I was drinking. And I thought it was going good. I really did. I really thought I was doing good. I had a good job. Thought I was getting a lot better. Found some dry goods. Evan says, oh my God. Dry goods that helped me manage all of this life and drinking. And then it happened again. It was the weirdest thing. I can't believe. Like, two cars later, totaled some cars. I have all these consequences, but they're slightly irrelevant. And had an intervention for my work. None of it really impacted me. Like, in the moment, I think it did. And then I'd forget. It's the wildest thing. So baffling. And I, one night, I was working this job. I told myself I would never drink with the people I worked with, the employees. And, of course, I did. Like, shocker. And we went out one night, and the intention was, by this time, I made insane plans to try to keep this deal together, because I don't know what it is about me and booze, man, but when I drink, it's like one shot or six shots, I'm out. I black out. That's a problem. I mean, that's like a major problem for someone like me. I'm trying to like drink other things. I'm trying to get it together. It's not working very well. Issues arise. All I know is that this one night I went out, and I wasn't supposed to go out with them. You know, they're like, I never go out for drinks at noon with people I work with. I go out for drinks at noon, but not with people I work with. For some reason, I said, yeah, and I never forget it. I was like, I'm just going to have, they have like margaritas on sale. I was like, get a margarita. Then LIT sounded really nice. And then I got a beer, and I don't remember anything else. Shocker. That always happened. This isn't weird. Like, I just get used to this. You know, it's kind of like the alcoholic life is the only normal in the doctor's opinion. Not only when I was drinking, the only life I ever knew was this thing. You know, the itch, the like uncomfortability. It's the wildest thing. So I didn't know any of that, and I drank, and I ended up totaling another car. And total cars before, it's whatever. You know, oopsie, so I'm so sorry about that. And I totaled this car, and it was the wildest thing. I asked for my mom for help again. And I went back in and out of consciousness. We got out of the hospital. She was like, oh, we found this great place. We're going to send you this dream place. It's going to be great. And I went. But the thing was, is I knew, I don't know what happened. Whatever happened that night, I don't know why or any of that stuff. By the grace. But that night, 4-23-07, that was it. That's when it's the sobriety date, 4-23-07. That night, I don't know what it was. I knew with every cell fiber being in my body that it wasn't the depression. It wasn't me being sad. It wasn't what state I was living in. It wasn't who I was with. For the first time, I knew that if I drank again, I was going to die. I don't know why, but I knew that I was going to drink. I knew that if I drank again, I would die, or I'd kill someone else, because I have this thing where I drink and I lose all control. And I don't know why, but that's what happens. So they shipped me off to this treatment, and the wildest thing was I was there, and I was extremely desperate. I would have done anything anybody told me to do, but I didn't talk to anybody. Because I did, I would do what I'm like new to do, which is like kind of like, hey, I'm hi. But on the inside, I'm dying, and I didn't even know that this was like, and it really wasn't until I figured out what alcoholism was that I knew what was going on. But I'd been there for a while, about like 2-3 weeks, and I'm going nuts. Like, it's extremely uncomfortable. So at night, I would sit up and I would pour a little bit of apple juice into these little cups, and I would drink it, just praying to reproduce the effect of alcohol. You know, I would chug Red Bulls back to back in the car, and I would drink them like I drank a beer. You know, I was just, and I didn't know, I didn't tell anybody about this. I never said anything, because that's kind of fucking weird. You know, I'm literally at a kitchen table listening to some like kind of sad music, drinking sips of apple juice, pretending and really hoping and praying that the Red Bull or the apple juice is going to give me something. But I know I don't want to drink, so it's this fascinating thing where I know if I'm drinking, I'm going to die, but all I want to do is drink. And thank God this woman told me to go talk, and it happened to me. It's Carl. He's here. But she said, you need to talk to this guy, Carl. And I didn't really talk to anybody or told anybody what was really going on. I'm just over here trying to get drunk off apple juice. And and the wildest thing happened is I told him that. I was at this thing at the treatment center, and I just told him, man, I'm dying. All I want to do is drink, but I can't drink. I can't drink, but all I want to do is drink. And he said, I get that. And then he took me in. We met up, and he took me through the big book. And I remember some part. There's one part, though, that I'll never forget. And I don't know if it was worded right, but we're going through the book, and I'd never identified with anyone before. But we're going through the book, and he said, the problem, Lindsay, is that I think we're on page 21. I'm assuming that's where it was. no choice. He said, I'm sorry to tell you, Lindsay, but you're going to drink again. You know, I'm like... But I was dead serious. I was like, nah, man, because I was desperate. You know what I'm saying? That kind of desperate where I'm telling people that are goofing off an outpatient to shut up. You know, and I'm like, I'm dying over here. I'm like, you know, a little slightly dramatic, but that's kind of how I got. Like, I was like, yeah. And he was like, but you're going to drink again. He's like, that's the problem, is that you're going to drink again. And I'm like, but no, man, you don't get it. I'm really serious this time. This time... it's real, and I mean it, and it's I'm not doing it again. He was like, that's the thing. You know, you're gonna drink again because you'll forget that. I'm sure you meant it the last time and the time before that. And I mean, you might only, that's the thing, is like I'd wake up, like, can't believe I did it again, wanting to rip my eyeballs out because I'm somewhere I don't even know where I am. And in that moment, I'm like dying. I hate this. I don't ever want to do this again. And I mean, it could be like 1 second later and it's gone. It could be 2 days later, you know, he's like, you're always going to forget. You'll always forget and you'll always drink again, and the only shot you got's God. And my experience was this, I really didn't care. That was it. I was like, all right, man. He told me to pray, and I did. Awkwardly under my covers at the halfway house, because I didn't want to look like a loser. I really did, and I thought some people would think I'm a weirdo. Because I thought that was weird, you know, to pray, but I did. I really did. And it absolutely was one of the biggest shifts in my entire life. You know, he told me the truth. And so after that, I got really into this book. I was blown away. So I got a half-house kind of computer and got headphones and, like, did research and listened to Joe and Charlie by myself and, like, made notes and, like, got really geeky. And the wildest thing happened. I didn't really have a teacher. I didn't really, you know, took a while to get through steps. I had a sponsor, and that took a while. But ended up, the wildest thing happened. Like, I got a little bit of time, and at the beginning, I loved being sober. You know what I mean? I really woke up. I had a really powerful experience, so I loved being sober. And then I really didn't like being sober. Because this thing would happen where I was, like, going to meetings all the time, and then I found myself, I'd go to a meeting and sit in the meeting, and I'd leave the meeting and just, like, just, and then I'd wake up, go to work, get home, take a nap, go to a meeting, go home, go to bed, wake up, go to work, get home, take a nap, go to a meeting, go to bed, wake up, go. Someone like me, that's the word, you know. I remember just, like, I didn't understand what was going on. I mean, I'm going to my meeting. I didn't understand it, but I was going crazy. Absolutely uncomfortable. Couldn't tell anybody, because people were like, "Why, you shouldn't be going crazy going to meetings, you know? I'm doing the deal, like, got sponsees, like, should be going crazy." And I was on a roller coaster for a while. I was on that roller coaster just at the whims of whatever, you know. One day I'm very grateful to be sober. The next day I would rather disappear. I didn't necessarily want to drink, but I'd rather just disappear into thin air, so as if I never existed, so I don't have to explain or take responsibility of anything. And then another amazing thing happened. Some cool experiences and another powerful experience where ran into Carl again. shocker. And he was like, all right. So I think I had about 3 years or 4 years or something. I can't remember. Somewhere right there. And there was a lot going on, man. I was thirsty for a new experience. And I'm very honored and blessed to have had a new one. And we went through it together. And my spirit woke up again. And that's what's interesting about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in my experience is that... Wait, I have till what? 8:15? Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Okay. Sometimes reading a clock, I have to look like a lot at it. Is that I'm very blessed because, you know, I had a very powerful first step experience. And it allowed me to be very open and took all the suggestions. And to be honest, my first rounds of a mentor was quite awkward because I didn't really have any, like, guidance. But I'm, like, doing... The thing was, I was willing as hell to do whatever it was. And when I went through this third time, I got in touch with things about myself through the process of the steps that really helped shape and evolve my relationship with my Creator. And I didn't know. The thing is, I really wasn't in touch with what I saw. I wasn't really in touch with alcoholism. You know, I was very clear at that time that when alcohol goes in my body, because that's something I never got that. Like, well, how come when I drink, like, I don't... Like, how come, if I would have given you, like my right leg to be able to just control the amount I took, you know, I didn't understand why when I drank, I didn't understand what this loss of control was with this crate. I didn't get that until I, you know, got in the rooms. I didn't know what was going on with that. I thought I was just, like, weird. I am weird. But it just kind of occurred to me that I am kind of weird and that we are a separate class. But I'm grateful because that experience really set me off again and to be able to be very effective for other alcoholics and other addicts and to help a lot of people. Then the wildest thing happened, you know, like life happened for a while. And I had this past few years why my Creator is so wonderful and why I sometimes don't even, like, it's kind of wild. But I've always had things come up, and I understand untreated alcoholism because I'll do some pretty nasty things sober, and I'll get really sad sober, you know, and I'll get very angry and very anxious and all of these things. But nothing, like, quite hit me as the past couple years. I had just one of those things happen, guys. My heart was just gone through a meat grinder. In fact, I remember the day, because I've always, fortunately, I've been... I've been surrounded by a lot of very, very wonderful, powerful, loving people. My Creator has seen that fit for me, and I just cannot, I'm very blessed for that. And I can't know if I'd be standing here without it, especially these past 2 years. Because around 5 years, my heart just got like crumbled up, tossed around, like in a meat grinder, stepped all over, like spit back out. And this is the wildest thing, is that like the first, through all of that pain, like a lot of pain, in fact, the first person I think I called or texted, I think it was Scott, like really in the morning, because I had a conversation with him, and he was like, well, you know, Lindsay, you got to be a bamboo, you know, it weathers a storm. He's like super loving, super loving. And like, and I love, you know, I love it. I was like, yeah. And I'm like, fuck bamboo. This is like, I can't be bamboo anymore. You know, bamboo's off in the wind, like gone. Like I'm nothing but a weed, you know, like done. And then I called Derek. And this is something that had been read and I had known like really logically, and this is a huge part of it's really like kind of shaped this past 2 years in good and bad, whatever you want to call it. It's not really good and bad, it's just painful or not. Is a call to Tarek, and he said, well, if what the big book says is true, if the promise in the big book, which, Carl, you know, I've always been told that this is one of the greatest promises, all of our problems are our making, if that is true, then thank God. But this time, it really had to be true. It really had to be true. And it was the greatest gift because I got to truly experience that, you know, like that. All the things, it's kind of like comfortable. I'm all like, kind of comfortable, right? Imagine being comfortable and then like your legs kind of get cut off, and that's not comfortable. It's kind of how it felt. You know, I'm very uncomfortable, and the neat thing about this, it actually pushed me way harder into my relationship with God and my disciplines in 10, 11, and 12. So I did a lot of spiritual work, and then the wildest thing happened. I like lost my mind. To be completely honest, this is the most painful time. I was really face to face with, you know, what the deal is. You know, like everything lost from me. I literally lost my mind. And one thing I'm really grateful for is that people around me just allowed me to be exactly where I was. You know, I got to relook in my first step. Am I a real alcoholic? You know, I got sober young. I was 21 when I got sober. Am I a real alcoholic? And thank God, a friend of mine got me in touch with someone, and I'm so grateful for that, because I don't know if anyone else would have been able to handle my ass, because I've always had a lot of willingness throughout my sobriety, and it's been a blessing. I'm gifted, you know, I've been blessed with a lot of willingness to do a lot of work, and always have very disciplined. For 2 years, I don't think I missed a beat with morning meditation or a nightly review or morning review or anything. And with this, the thing I thought was inconceivable, I hear meetings if someone would say, you know, every time I pray or I put a spiritual penny in the piggy bank. And after this experience, I'm like, damn, I don't even get a piggy bank. Like, it's like I lost my mind and I couldn't pray, couldn't meditate, and within 3 weeks I'm nuts. Nuts. I'm talking, I can't even get up to get to work on time. You know, I can't make it to work. Oh yeah, everything went, my life literally just started crumbling around me, and there was like absolutely nothing I could do about it. And then that's when I really, for me, my experience, it just kept on bringing me back to this first step. When I wanted to or not, it did. And I didn't know that majority of that whole entire time I've been sober, I'd been taking a lot of credit, and I never knew it. I never knew it. That I'd been taking credit for my willingness, for the fact that I get up and I do morning meditation every day, and I get up and I do this, and I take these meetings, and I do this for people. And I would say, I guess logically, but there's something, it was just an experience I had to have, you know. And it was wonderful, because I'm clear as day. There's something I'm very crystal clear about today. After all the long road of a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, because for someone like me who loves God a lot, I'm very clear of the consciousness that draws all through all of us, you know, all this cool stuff. Someone that loves God a lot, to have that ripped away from me and not being able to snap my fingers and bring it back, because I know it works and I know it's actually really powerful, and I can't just make myself get back into it, is really painful. You know, it's very painful. Because if I could, I would. You know. So it was something I really did get really in touch with for me, that it's, my experience is all about the grace and it's all about God. Period. You know, my willingness to wake up in the morning, my willingness to pray during the day, my willingness to call someone else, my willingness to sit down with another alcoholic, my willingness to write inventory is 100% as a result of my Creator. And I'm grateful for every little thing, because for a long time I couldn't meditate when I wanted to. I would go past my meditation chair and be like, oh, yeah, right. And even when I'd sit down in it, there was just such resistance. There was just so much pain, resentment, fear, you know, that my illness is rooted in all that stuff. And it came back with its head rearing. So I'm very clear today that everything, and sometimes not always, because sometimes I totally forget, don't worry. But when I'm awake to it, I'm very clear that this whole thing, you know, me being separated from alcohol on the day that I was, me still being sober today when I really didn't want to be sober today. Trust me, my little mind, I mean, for real, it is painful. For someone like me to not be, to have conscious contact, can get really painful, you know. And then I couldn't even make myself pray. I couldn't even make, and I've never balked on inventory. I never balked on supper. I balked hard on everything, you know, and it sucked. Because if I've had an experience with the 12 steps, if my spirit has woken up, fallen back to sleep, woken up, and I've loved this journey. It's been up and down. But man, from the bottom of my heart, I've never experienced anything like this. And I'm grateful I have people in my life that allow me to be exactly where I was. They didn't try to change me. They didn't tell me I was an idiot. They didn't tell me, you need to get it together. They just were there. And they let me be very honest. And that was that. You know, so I'm very, very grateful for that experience, because I'm just really crystal clear. I'm no different than anybody else. We all just little kids running around real scared, you know, with a real deadly, creepy, nasty, like, illness attached to it. It's sneaky. My favorite speaker is Delana, and she says, I love her. She says, shit is greasy. That meat is greasy. It'll clog your arteries and knock your heart out. And she says it all gnarly. I'm not as gnarly as she is. But I love her, and I get that. And currently, today, it was the wildest thing. I remember getting really excited from someone who do like 25 minutes in the morning, 30 minutes at night meditation, lots of writing, lots of reading, to someone that, like, for me, I could barely say a prayer. For like, oh, this wasn't like, oh, that was cute for 3 months. Like, I'm going on a long period of time, and I'm just, somehow I make it to the meetings. Somehow I'm still working with people. I don't know where any of this stuff comes from, and I'm clear where it comes from now. But it really got me rerouted into an absolutely new experience of my Creator. You know, because I'm like, I'll never be as spiritual as I was back then. I don't feel the same. I don't feel like I have the same light. I don't feel like all these things. But, cool, because it's not supposed to be like that anyways. You know, it just is what it is. I'm having a completely new experience with my Creator, and that's currently what He went through the steps. Gulf 10, 11, and 12. I'm working with 2.5 newcomers right now. The halfsie, because we don't really know where she appeared to. But we'll find out soon, I'm sure. One of them I do a fifth step next week, and then another one we start at the beginning of the book. I'm ultimately grateful that I get to do this, because it's not, my experience with Alcoholics Anonymous is wonderful and it's beautiful. I'm very, very free today, and I'm mostly uncomfortable a lot. Mm-hmm. And if there's one thing besides, like, being very crystal clear that, dude, all, like, I used to get frustrated with people when they wouldn't do the work, you know, or whatever. And I'm just, and it's grateful. I'm very, like, all of this experiences has just helped me to be more effective for another alcoholic. That's it. And it's allowed me to get closer to my Creator. I believe that's just all that ever ends up happening, because I'm going to fall asleep again. I'm going to go nuts again. Going to lose my mind. I'm going to be very light and fun. I'm going to be very sad. All that shit's going to continue to happen. And I'm really grateful my creators kept me around for it. I don't really have anything like pretty much that kind of simple. And that's why I'm like, I don't have anything really special. I do know that I was sitting in this meeting, and it's like old guy in the back. He was, I don't even know what was, I can't even remember, but he referenced a page in the book, and I've read it a lot since then. And it probably makes sense, but it's out of the family afterward. And it says, everybody knows those in bad health, and those who seldom play do not laugh. Okay, I probably should read that again. Everybody knows that those in bad health and those who seldom play do not laugh much. So let each family play together or separately as much as their circumstances warrant. We are sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. We cannot subscribe to the belief that this life is a veil of tears, though it once was just that for many of us. But it is clear that we made our own misery. God didn't do it. Avoid them, the deliberate manufacture of misery. But if trouble comes, cheerfully capitalize it as an opportunity to demonstrate His omnipotence. Which is kind of funny, because someone like me laughs at crap like that, because I'll be like very cynical and be like, opportunity, cheerfully, what? You know, cheerfully. But it's very similar to not all of our problems are of our own making. And because of the 12 steps, continuing to have a relationship with my Creator and my problems of being my own making and directions in the big book, I'm free today. I might be uncomfortable. I'll get angry. I'll totally, like, get resentments and be, like, totally out there. But I'm pretty free, and I laugh a lot. If anything, through a lot of things, I always laugh, and I have a lot of fun. And even in those times where I haven't necessarily got my whole disciplines like I think they should be and what they should feel like, I know for me, laughing is wonderful. Me being able to laugh, talk with friends, have a relationship with my family again, and just enjoy life is, like, wonderful. And I'm really grateful to be able to work with a lot of women. And I'm really also, I know, I'm really grateful, right? To be able to be a part of a lot of people who continue to stay involved in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, because it saves my life. And I get to wake up to how wonderful and how similar and alike and how different we are. And I know for me, Terry has gotten together a lot of speakers. To be honest, like, a lot of them are very dear and close to my heart and have impacted my life more than most people could ever imagine. Everyone. And from the bottom of my heart, I'm excited to share this weekend with y'all. I think we're going to have a lot of fun. And know that if there's anything I can do for anybody, my experience is wild, it's crazy. It is what it is. It ain't perfect all the time. Done some weird stuff, for sure. But if there's one thing, God is everything. And that's just about it, because it is what it is. You know, and that's one thing I'm crystal on. You know, it is what it is. Ever-flowing stream of life, my friend. We're going to laugh and just have a good time. So I'm really excited. We're going to rock out this weekend, have a good time. And thank you again for everything. And I love you guys. Thank you. All right. We're going to take a 15-minute break. We're going to come back at 25 after.